welcome to another TRL podcast. First in a series of programs, we feature experts in conversation. Here, Kristen Fernandez Medina introduces her recent article entitled Numbers versus Feelings, in which she promotes the importance of integrating people's experience and personal perceptions into the studies that are preparing us for a modal shift towards autonomous modes of transport. Kristen debates this point in conversation with her colleague Camilla Fowler. We kicked off by asking both contributors to introduce themselves.
My name is Kristen Fernandez Medina. I'm a senior psychologist at TRL, and in my time at TRL, I spend a lot of time thinking about and researching how people think about how they change their behaviors when it comes to transport and transport use, particularly in terms of new technologies like automated vehicles and how we can get people to engage with these new technologies in a really positive way, but also understand how they might benefit them in future.
I'm Camilla Fowler and I'm head of automated transport at TRL. I have a real interest in safety of automated vehicles and looking at the safety of automation now during trials and testing, but also through to deployment and really shaping the future of transport, ensuring that we meet the projected benefits of improved road safety and that we take a more sort of proactive approach to managing road safety.
So I wrote this very short sort of thought piece type of paper because I thought that in industry at the moment, certainly, we get a lot of focus when it comes to vehicle automation, certainly around the safety of the vehicles and how we ensure that these vehicles are safe to operate on UK and worldwide roads. And that is incredibly important, you know, is something that we really have been working very hard to make sure is passed through the right levels and the right inspections. But it also strikes me that there's another part of the conversation that's really important, and is how we integrate and the fact that we really need to integrate people's experiences and their own perceptions into the process. And by that, I mean that we have, as individuals, lots of different experiences, lots of different thoughts, lots of experiences, and we bring that into the mix when we make decisions about everything in life, from, you know, what to eat to what form of transport to use. And one of the really key questions that we're going to have to answer as an industry is how we ensure a modal shift, a safe modal shift, from the types of transport modes that are making people unsafe and that are less environmentally friendly and less sustainable, to modes of transport that will allow a much better level of sustainability and safety when we're trying to get around.
Okay, I think that's really interesting, Kristen, and I think it's really important that part of that experience is actually ensuring that the automated vehicle and this new mode of transport meets the needs of the end user. So actually understanding what are their requirements of an automated vehicle, what's important to them, and then ensuring that automated vehicles are designed to meet those requirements. So, you know, there's a lot of promises about accessibility, for instance, but actually, as far as I can see, there hasn't been a huge amount of research into what makes a vehicle accessible and how can we meet that as a priority. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting to really think about what is going to make the end user want to use automated transport.
I think that you've hit on a really important point, and that's part of the equation here is what groups, what subgroups within the population we can see benefiting most from technologies such as vehicle automation. And within those groups, the ones that we tend to consider when we talk about this is groups like older road users and people with certain disabilities, which might otherwise not be able to get around as easily. And really, like you say, that there needs to be more push to research in those areas and not just apply a mold, because I think the key point of this article is that, you know, we can go about, again, as an industry, you know, creating standards or how things need to go. But ultimately, it needs to come from end users and what they're actually after when it comes to these services that will ultimately inform how we get them to, how we encourage them to use those services.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the projected benefits of automation is that we can enhance communities. And until we understand how that community can be enhanced by listening to the people, sort of within those communities, it's very difficult to design a vehicle around that. And I think the other point that I'd make is around safety. You know, there is that this focus on ensuring safety for vehicles and for trials and testing, but also ensuring safety of vehicles for deployment. But I think ensuring safety now, whilst we are developing vehicles and getting to that sort of deployment stage, is actually really key in building trust of the technology. And the more transparent and open we can be about what safety measures we've got, assure people of safety, we'll really sort of develop that trust in automation for ultimately the consumer.
And it strikes me that there's another element of safety here as well. So there's the kind of more, suppose we could call them more rigid, more industry-wide standards of how you build a safe system, how you build a safe vehicle that can operate on roads. But there's also perhaps a more subtle question about what safety means to different people. How safe is safe enough? How safe is not safe enough? And I think that was one of the really interesting bits of the Streetwise project that we carried out a couple of years back. Because really that sort of wanted to start from the beginning and sort of go, hold on. So we've started asking people, we started engaging them in these trials around automation, but we haven't actually taken a step back to understand what they actually conceptualize as safety when they think about these technologies. You know, what sort of things, what sort of experiences come to mind when they think about, or when they consider what to them is going to feel safe enough. And from my knowledge and sort of experience talking to various people, that depends a lot on their life choices and you know, their sort of lifestyle, whether they have children. One of the really interesting questions that I got when speaking to participants through something like Gateway was the question about, you know, how safe, or at what point do you consider an automated vehicle to be safe enough to take your child to school, for example. And that is a consideration that we also have to keep in mind when we design not just the vehicles, but also the services that are around them. And it all kind of goes back to that point you made earlier, Camilla, about meeting user needs and not just designing something that looks nice and feels nice and feels safe, ticks all the right boxes in terms of the industry standard. But it also needs to be fit for purpose when it comes to the end user.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's multiple elements to this. So we've got how the media will influence members of the public. And, you know, if there were a safety event and there's media uproar over a safety event, the level of trust in that technology is going to reduce. Similarly, people often fear what they don't understand. So equipping people with knowledge, you know, this is what an automated vehicle does. This is how it can be used. This is how you can ensure you're safe whilst using it. Again, I think is quite key. But also being able to anticipate the behaviour of that vehicle. So I know some projects have really focused on trying to make the movement of the vehicle as human-like as possible. And I was watching a video on YouTube the other day where somebody is in a driverless taxi in the States, and the rate of acceleration is such that actually the passenger was very uncomfortable with it. And it didn't mean that vehicle necessarily was unsafe. It was just responding in a way that the passenger felt uncomfortable with, because it was a new experience and maybe not how they would drive themselves. And it's like, you know, I sit in vehicles all the time where I feel people brake ever so slightly too late. I like to be able to leave a gap and to break when I feel comfortable to. And if somebody is braking too late, that makes me feel uncomfortable. And that will be the same with automated vehicles, I think.
Yeah, and I think one aspect of this as well that is worth thinking about a little bit is when we think about an automated vehicle from an operator perspective, so how an operator, in future when that were possible, to have members of the public operate some sort of level of automation, how they would behave and what information they would need to understand how they need to behave under certain circumstances. But there's also a slightly different aspect of it, and as we think about people as passengers of automated vehicles. And it strikes me that those two types of behaviors and even perhaps the motivations for uptake would be quite different in some cases as well. So I think that there's also a nuance there. And it almost, the more you think about it, the more you can break it down into lots of little research questions that it would be great to get answered in some way, or at least, get some better data and understanding on. Because really, I think ultimately, when we start thinking about the future uptake, there will be groups of people, we know the kind of early uptake, there'll be people who take it up very early just because it's a new technology and it's interesting and it's exciting. But you also have parts of the society that won't be as keen and will have particular concerns about it. And that's something that I think we just need to, as I've said before, just part of the consideration when we think about this whole ecosystem, I suppose.
One thing that I'm quite interested in, Kristen, is about perception and reality, and how can you change people's perception into reflecting what is actually real? I know that media has quite a big influence on people's perception. So, after, for instance, in America, after there's been a particular gun crime, for instance, people fear guns. People fear the nuclear industry, even though the level of risk to the community may be very low. We may have that kind of perception around automated vehicles when actually, that perception may not necessarily be real. As a psychologist, how can you influence that change in perception?
And I can't say, unfortunately, that I'm an expert specifically in kind of the perceptions versus reality type of issues. But my thoughts on it are that things like direct exposure and exposure of people that you know. So just knowing someone who's had a good or possibly even just a neutral experience, something that hasn't gone horribly wrong, is going to potentially be quite a strong tool when it comes to looking at things like modal shift and automation and any kind of new sort of transport mode. That's something that has been found a bit when it comes to things like EVs. From the bits of work that I had any kind of access to or any involvement with, we tended to see that people who knew someone who had an EV were perhaps more likely to be a bit more positive about it or not have, like you say, some of these biases or negative feelings toward it. Reality is that a very small number of people, and we're included within that number of people in the world at the moment, have had any kind of exposure to an automated vehicle. And that's something that's going to gradually change. But the media is still a very big outlet, and they will publicize, big events. And unfortunately, some of those events will revolve around collisions, and especially if there's any sort of loss of life. So that's a big challenge, I think, certainly for the moment. And like I say, while that exposure to the specific technologies is limited to certain people. Coming from the point of a member of a public, I think there can be a level at which, we were talking about perceptions versus reality earlier. Some of these trials, and if we look, like you say, at a sort of operation within very specific areas, whether that would perhaps come across as being too managed, and therefore there might be overconfidence, or people might not feel like they're getting a true representation of what the technology, the vehicle, can actually do or what it should be expected to do. And does that perhaps negatively affect how people view or trust those technologies in future? Because they're kind of seeing it in a kind of very overly managed environment.
Yeah, I think safety has to remain a priority. And where you're pushing the boundaries of technology, so you're maybe exploring the capabilities of the vehicle beyond the defined operational design domain, that needs to be done in a fairly controlled way and potentially in a controlled environment, whether that's in a controlled environment like, a test bed or a closed track, or whether that's somewhere like Smart Mobility Living Lab in London, where you have roadside infrastructure that can actually monitor the safety of that vehicle. Pushing the boundaries of technology, there needs to be some level of control and some level of safety assurance. Once you are more confident in the ability of the technology, at that point you can start introducing passengers and giving people the experience of a more mature technology once safety has been assured. I think it could potentially be quite damaging to put apart from it being unethical, which I'm sure you know all about, but putting passengers in a vehicle that isn't ready for passengers or poses a potentially higher level of risk, could actually be quite damaging to sort of consumer trust. If I just head back to, the title of the article that you wrote, Kristen, sort of numbers or feelings, I think it's really a combination of both where, we need to assure safety and we need to be able to demonstrate safety. I think we need to be transparent. We need to, really gain consumer trust. But in terms of feelings, I think, the consumer needs to feel listened to and actually doing that research and that engagement to ensure we understand what their requirements are so we can feed that into the design is really important. And it's important that they feel safe. So I don't think it's a numbers or feelings. My feeling is it's a bit of a combination of the two.
Mm. Well, my feeling is that I agree with you. So I think that's really the key point of this sort of small article. It's not intended to be a particularly heavily scientific kind of script. It's essentially just sort of putting the idea out there that when we think about developing and rolling out autonomous vehicles at whatever point that might happen, we can't stick to the notion of we're just going to build a thing and people are going to use it because it's cool and it's got all of these benefits that we as an industry all share a really clear understanding of. I think it's going to be a much more nuanced process where we're going to have to bring members of the public along and really sort of work on generating a very in-depth understanding. We don't even have to start from scratch. There's lots of research in areas, that I refer to in the paper, electric vehicles, thinking about other road users and other issues around that we can really build on and sort of just work along alongside those to make sure that when we get to a point that we've got some viable services that can be rolled out, that, it's not going to go unused, that people are actually going to engage with them, that they're going to feel, as you say, safe, but that they're also going to feel that there is room for them in their lives. And that's really, I think, the sort of nut that we need to crack in order to start getting to a position where people will consider trading in their own vehicle, for example, for shared options, even if that were to become an option.
Thank you for listening. Tune in for further TRL podcasts coming soon.